Okay, I have something to go back on here. In my notes, I jumped from one thing to another, and it led me to skip something very important that we don't want to leave out of the story at all, and that is the Exodus out of Egypt. I should have said a good bit more about that at the time, so I'm going to go back and pick it up now. This call of Moses to lead the people, he does that. He gathers them, and he's their acknowledged leader. And he leads them to the point where he defies the Pharaoh of Egypt and gets the people together ready to leave. And of course, the famous story is that God tells the people, here's what you should do on this particular night. You're to get dressed like you're going on a long trip and eat standing up. And here's what you're to eat. You're to eat bread that doesn't have any yeast in it because you don't have time for it to rise. And you're to eat lamb and bitter herbs. And you get ready for a trip because you're leaving. And that's just what happens. It's called the Exodus of the Jews out of Egypt under Moses' leadership. And that meal is called a Seder. And it's still celebrated once a year in commemoration of their deliverance out of Egypt and out of slavery. And of course, the thing that pressures the Pharaoh to let them go are the plagues that God sends on Egypt. And these aren't just random things made to annoy the Egyptians and let the Jews go. Each one of them attacks an Egyptian god. Every one of them is a plague of something the Egyptians worshipped. And then finally, the last plague was that it struck down the eldest son in every home because the eldest son was supposed to be precious to all the gods, the Egyptian gods, and so it undercut them all. And God had said to Moses, by these plagues, I'm going to show the Egyptians who's really God. So I did mention the other great holy day of the Jewish year as Yom Kippur, but I hadn't mentioned the Seder. My apologies. I jumped from one spot in the notes to the other. But this is all part of the national consciousness of Israel and helps form the nation and is still, for Jews, part of the national consciousness that's national but international. It's part of the Jewish consciousness of having been chosen by God for a special task in the world. Now, where we last left off, we left off with Israel having been conquered and then Judah having been conquered as well, so that Jerusalem and the temple fell to the Babylonian Empire. But when the Medo-Persian Empire took over from them, Cyrus the Great allowed the Jews to go back and rebuild the temple. And then I said Israel was never again an independent nation. You have the Medes and the Persians conquered by Alexander, and you have the Greeks conquered by the Romans. And I think from there you pretty much know the history of that we have an independent nation today, yes, but from then until the foundation of a free Israel in 1948, there was no independent nation, and that was a long time. So during this time of conquest, however, the theology develops, and the prophets call the people back to covenant faithfulness. They keep reminding them it's only because of their unfaithfulness that their punishment is to be held in captivity. And they look for the coming of a Messiah who will be able to restore the nation and bring peace and bring the accomplishment of Israel's call to the world to fruition. But the Jews have been under some kind of captivity for a long time now. By the time the Roman Empire arises, they've already been captured for quite a while, and they have been dispersed throughout into North Africa, in the Middle East, up into Europe. And so a great many of them do not continue to know Hebrew. And that means that's a disaster, because it means they can't read the scriptures. And so in the third century before Christ, ...70 rabbis make a translation of the Old Testament. And it's known as the Septuagint. Oh, I left the A out. And it's often just written this way, the Roman numeral for 70. And it's translated into Greek, because Greek was the international language of the ancient world. Even though the Romans may have been in charge of it and they spoke Latin, that was not the international language. The international language in which you did business was Greek, just as English is today. And so this enabled the dispersed Jews to be able to read their scriptures, even if they couldn't read Hebrew. And through this time, we have the development of commentaries on the Old Testament, on the scriptures, and chief among which is the Talmud. There are two traditions of Talmud, and the study of the Talmud and the writing of the Talmud occupy Jewish scholars and theologians and thinkers in this period. And this takes us up into the time past Christ. I mean, we skip this because we'll cover this under Christianity. But there were several rebellions in Israel against the Roman Empire. And the one that was the most disastrous was under the Maccabees, that resulted in the destruction of Jerusalem again in the year 70 AD. And that was the rebuilt temple. And in that year, it was destroyed, and it's not ever been rebuilt. This is a disaster of major proportion, because it was the center of Jewish life and thought. It was the symbol of Jewish life and thought. It was the place where God lived, on the mercy seat in the holy place of the temple. And it was destroyed by the Romans, who wanted to teach the world a lesson that nobody rebels against Rome and gets away with it. So they took it down stone by stone. And the only thing that remains is a wall that was near the temple, wasn't part of it, but the famous Wailing Wall, which still exists. That's the nearest thing to it that survived. So this has made many Jewish thinkers rely all the more strongly on the messianic prophecies and the hope for the restoration of Israel. But it's also fragmented Jewish thought into many different sects, different interpretations. And I will want to cover those in some detail in our next meeting.